weeknights from 6 on 2FM.
Well, big thanks to Beto Da Silva for driving us through the afternoon. It is Thursday, August 22nd. I'm Shane Dawson and you are listening to Game On. Coming up between now and 7pm, Tony O'Donoghue joins us live from Tallaght Stadium ahead of St. Pat's Conference League qualifier. Well, we'll also keep you up to date with how Shamrock Rovers get on in their Europa League qualifier in Greece, with kickoff less than 30 minutes away. Rebecca Cray looks ahead to the Women's FAI Cup quarterfinals this weekend. Shane Stokes rounds up stage 6 of the Vuelta España. Well, Jeff Shepherd has his eye on American football coming to the Viva Stadium this weekend. And Irish Wolfhounds coach Alan Lemazenay is also in studio, because there's even more American football happening in Donnybrook tomorrow. As always, if you want to get in touch, you can send us a text on 51552, WhatsApp 0871879200, or we are on X at Game On 2FM.
Game On 2FM.
Good evening. Welcome along to what is going to be a busy show, busy hour of sport. Rebecca Cray is already in studio, nice and early. Rebecca, how are you?
I'm good, Shane. How's things?
I'm very well. I'm very, very well. Looking forward to a busy show, busy weekend of sport. Looking forward to a busy weekend of FAI Cup quarterfinals.
Yeah, most definitely. Coming into the business end of the season now. Yeah, yeah, some tasty fixtures coming up.
Absolutely. 3 on Saturday, your own Shells in Tallaght on Monday as well. I'm assuming that's because Rovers were in Avenir Cup final action last weekend, so it's being pushed out until the Monday night 7:45 kickoff.
Yeah, it's a case of just getting it kind of to a day that suits both teams. You know, we've obviously got our men's team are fulfilling the fixture tomorrow against Bows. So it'll be a case of hopefully getting a few more fans out to that as well on Monday.
Hopefully there are fans across the weekend at all of those matches as well. We will be previewing them in detail if you are in the South Dublin area. Deal or Waves at 3 o'clock against Sligo. If you're in the Cork area, 5 o'clock kickoff on Saturday, Cork Bows. And if you're in Limerick, Treaty against Athlone at 5 o'clock as well. And then of course Rovers against Shells on Monday. There is a league match actually as well, Galway playing Peamount on Saturday at 5 o'clock. So if you're in the Galway area, get down to watch a bit of live football. Rebecca, we will be coming back to football later in the show. We'll be going over to Tony O'Donoghue shortly as well at Tallaght Stadium. News headlines today, because it was actually unusually for late August, a bit of a busy news day. Cricket Ireland have confirmed that the Ireland men's cricket team will host England for a 3 one-day internationals series from the 17th to the 21st of September next year. Ireland and England senior men's teams have met on 15 previous occasions in one-day international cricket, with Ireland winning twice, England 11 times and 2 no results. It will in fact be the first ever 3-match one-day series between the two sides played in Ireland, and the first fixture between the two teams in Ireland since May 2019. They aren't the only fixtures between Ireland and England coming up, of course, with England women touring here next month for 3 ODIs and 2 T20s. The location of the matches in Ireland still to be confirmed at the moment. Rugby. Leinster senior coach Jack Nienaber has issued a positive update on Dan Sheehan, saying he expects the hooker to be fit for Ireland's Six Nations campaign. The front row forward injured his knee in the opening test against South Africa in July and subsequently underwent surgery. The 25-year-old, who has 27 caps, was with the Leinster squad that trained in Goree this morning in Wexford. It had been feared the injury may reel the Dubliner out for a longer period. Staying with rugby, Ireland women's head coach Scott Beaman has confirmed his Ireland women's 15s coaching team for the upcoming test match against Australia in Belfast and the WXV1 campaign in Vancouver. Beaman will be assisted by former England international Alex Codling, who joins the setup as forwards coach, while Hugh Hogan has been named as defence coach and Gareth Steenson comes in as kicking coach. In addition, Dennis Fogarty continues his role as scrum coach for a third season. Former Ireland international and Grand Slam winner Maz Riley links up with Beaman's squad as a World Rugby coach intern. The IRFU, have confirmed that John McKee will move into a new role within the Women's High Performance Programme, with a strong focus on coach development in the Women's 15 pathway. In racing, Content gained revenge on her Irish Oaks conqueror, You Got To Me, to claim the Yorkshire Oaks for trainer Aidan O'Brien. Today, the daughter of Galileo registered the biggest victory of her career with Ryan Murr on board.
Emily Upjohn, Kieran Schumacher continuing to sit and wait. Port Fairy, You Got To Be Content on the right-hand side. And then behind these is Mistral Star. Emily Upjohn with a furlong and a half to go. The right-hand side, Content, is getting closer all the time. Then You Got To Be, as they race inside the final 200 yards. Emily Upjohn still being pressed by You Got To Be. Content over on the far side. 3 fillies in line for the potential Yorkshire Oaks. Content on the inside. On the outside, You Got To Be. Past Emily Upjohn, and another big win on the week for
came forward since the Curragh. Every time we stepped her up in trip, she improved. We thought going to the, we ran her in the fillies race mile and a quarter derby weekend to Prissy Polly to see would she get a mile and a quarter, and we finished behind two older fillies, and Ryan came in and said no doubt a mile and a half, and he'd have no problem dealing with them. And we went to the Irish Oaks and we had a pacemaker and didn't go fast enough for her, and the race did never opened up for her, but he gave her an incredible ride. She can be keen and she's not straightforward or easy, but she's a lot of pace, but he did an incredible job to get her relaxed. And but the pace was stronger today, and she did keep coming. Ryan was, he said he was surprised after she's been so keen how much she kept coming from the three marker, but he gave her an incredible ride. But she's a very brave filly, will be better and probably in a better race, a faster run race, right. Even
Aidan O'Brien loves that event at York Racecourse. Just to mark your card as well, Luke McCann is in Diamond League action tonight in Lausanne. He runs in the 1500 metre alongside Olympic gold medalist Cole Hocker and 5000 metre gold medalist from Paris, Norway's Jakob Ingebrigtsen. Team news in from the Rovers match, 6:30 kickoff, just over 20 minutes away. We will be keeping you up to date with the scores on that one. Danny Mandreo, freshly signed to Rovers, starts on the bench. Liam Poles in goal, Grace Cleary, Hoare Honahan, the defenders, Trevor Clark as well, Darren Nugent, Gary O'Neill, Dylan Watts, Aaron Green and Neil Ferrugia, not Ferrugia I should say, starting for Rovers in Greece against Pauk. Now cycling, Vuelta, stage 6, Shane Stokes of the Velo is on the line because Australian Ben O'Connor completed his collection of stage victories in all three of the cycling's grand tours by winning stage 6 of the Vuelta España today, and also took the overall lead after his solo run left everyone behind. Photo finish yesterday, Shane, this was a bit more comprehensive.
Absolutely, yeah. So Ben O'Connor, he became the 111th rider in history to take stage wins in all three Grand Tours. And he was part of the day's breakaway and finished a staggering distance ahead of the next riders. He was 4.5 minutes clear of Marco Frigo of the Premier Tech team. And then the race favourites, the group of race leader Primoz Roglic, was over six minutes back. So it's a really... considerable victory by Ben O'Connor, and puts him into the red leader, so the red jersey of race leader. He's 4 minutes 51 ahead of Primoz Roglic now, which now makes him a real overall contender for the race. So yeah, pretty staggering ride. It's one of these days, I think, that comes along every maybe once a year or something for a rider, that they just have these, they call it float days, where they kind of often say they can't feel the chain on the bike, and it very much looked like Ben O'Connor was on one of those days today.
Well, let's hear from the man himself, stage 6 winner of the Vuelta España, Australian Ben O'Connor.
I felt a little bit my own world today. When the group of 30 went, I was a bit disappointed because I thought it was a pretty good opportunity. So yeah, when the race opened up again, I kind of just went for it. I felt today was just a day to seize my opportunity, and I just laid it all out there, and I felt like I could win this stage from the start. So yeah, it's pretty special when you can just go out and crush it like that. I absolutely loved every moment. Yeah, I enjoyed today a lot. It was beautiful racing, I think, all around. And I was looking at the Triple Grand Tour winners. The list of guys have done it before this race started. So I'm proud to put my name there on that list. Yeah, I guess I have the red jersey as well. So it's going to be a once-in-a-lifetime experience, maybe. So I'm going to enjoy every moment.
So Ben O'Connor taking the red jersey from Primoz Roglic. In terms of the Irish contingent, Darren Rafferty and Eddie Dunbar, Shane, what's the update in that regard?
Yes, so Eddie Dunbar was in the same group as Primoz Roglic. He rolled in 31st, so he didn't contest the sprint from that group. The first of that group was 9th, so he was in that group. And there was only 38 riders in that group, so it attests to the quality of the group and how tough a day it was. So there was no massive mountains on the day, but it was the third hilliest of the Vuelta in terms of a lot of rolling, smaller climbs. And with the heat as well, that's a kind of a big consideration. So Darren Rafferty was further back. He's racing or riding for Richard Carapaz, the EF Education Easy Post team leader. So on days like this, he's just doing teamwork and then peeling off. it's his first Grand Tour, and he will almost certainly be prominent later in the race. So yes, so basically Dunbar moves up five places to 33rd overall. He had been hoping to do better than that, but he had a difficult day on stage four, as indeed did Ben O'Connor, actually. It was a really, really hot day. I think it was 42 degrees that day, and both those riders suffered in the heat. But Dunbar was looking better today, and obviously Ben O'Connor was looking a whole lot better. So I think once that really tough heat relents, you're going to see the guys that normally would be there riding to expectations, as opposed to having these off days.
Okay. You briefly touched on it yesterday, for those who might have missed our conversation yesterday on Game On. Just what have we to look forward to over the weekend, Shane?
Yeah, so there's the next few days are all quite hilly, which is good news for Eddie Dunbar. So tomorrow's stage is to Cordoba. There's a second category climb, which comes about 25 kilometres from the finish. There's downhill and flat roads, but it's kind of, the climb should be tough enough that if there's gaps over the top, that some of them may persist to the finish. So it won't be a hugely influential stage, but could catch some riders out. The following day is to Cazorla, and that is an uphill finish, which will be more selective. And then you've got stages to Granada and Bayona after that, which both have hills in them, but downhill to the finish. But again, there'll be selective days, and at the very least, they'll take it out of the riders' legs and add to the accumulated fatigue. So yeah, they'll be very interesting to watch.
Okay, lots of entertainment ahead of us. Shane Stokes at Avello, thank you so much for joining us. Now, the 2024 Paralympic Games get underway this day week in Paris, with the opening ceremony scheduled for next Wednesday. 35 athletes will be competing across 9 sports for Team Ireland. Earlier this week, I spoke to para archer Kerry Leonard. The Mead woman will be competing at her second Paralympics, so she does have a bit of experience on her side, but still, I'm sure nerves might be there for Kerry Leonard.
Excitement. I think everyone's probably saying the same thing. I feel prepared, so I want to get there now and just be able to showcase all the work I've put in.
How has training been in the last couple of weeks? I'm assuming it's been full on, but are you peaking now at the right time?
Well, that's always the hope. I mean, I've put a lot of preparation in, like I've said. I've been dedicating the last couple of months to archery specifically. And I've also been travelling. I've been in the Netherlands. I've been at an intensive training camp in the UK. And then, you know, the facilities here in Sport Ireland, in the Institute, I've been using them for the last number of weeks, making sure that we've been doing heat prep. Ireland isn't exactly prepared for the type of temperatures that I could be expecting in Paris. So I've been definitely utilizing the facilities here. And then we've been here for the last 10 days, specifically training day in, day out.
For the casual observer, how weather temperatures and everything like that, like how specific is that for your sport and everything that you might have to contend with?
Yeah, I think archery is probably unique when you look at the spectrum of the sports that are available. So we typically are out for quite a significant period of time in comparison to some of the other sports. Day one of my competition, I'll be out for at least 72 arrows, and then that can be anywhere from 2.5 hours plus, depending on, again, the weather conditions. And we're out in those conditions. Rain, hail, sun, we're out. So you have to take a lot of different factors into consideration. The only time that the competition will get called is if there's thunder and lightning. So you have to be prepared for everything and willing to compete in that.
You obviously have to be physically on top of your game to get the scores you want, but I'd imagine there's a bit of mental fatigue in your sport as well as competitions go on.
There is, for sure. I mean, as a sport, it can be quite monotonous. That might be the most kindest thing to say, but it can be. For archery, consistency is key, so you're trying to replicate every single step, every single arrow, and there is a tendency that you can kind of slip into, you know, cruise control, for lack of a better word. You know, when you get into a car when you're leaving work and then you arrive home into your driveway, you don't necessarily know the steps you took to get home, and that can sometimes seep into archery as well. And so from a mental perspective, you need to make sure that you're utilizing steps to reset every single arrow and make sure that your mind is on the job at hand.
For you personally, what's the target for Paris 2024?
I think for me personally, the target is to, you know, to come back from this Games proud and content of my performance. Now, I don't say that in a way that is kind of being dismissive or in a PC way for any media. I've gone to, you know, a number of international competitions. I've represented Ireland at a Paralympics already, at numerous world championship level, and I just inherently find fault in my own shooting and my own performance. And so my real goal here is to come away from this competition happy and content that I've given everything that I possibly can, and I've left no stone unturned in the pursuit of, maybe not perfection, but in the pursuit of happiness with what I've put in and gotten out of the sport.
Archery gives you happiness. What would I be right in saying that? That's your release.
It is. I mean, I think if you do any sport, you're not doing it because it's pain and suffering, right? You're doing it because it brings you joy. For me, that's a number of different things. So internationally, I'm competing at the highest level. That makes me happy. I'm also competing against people that have had similar experiences to me, and I'm able to relate and create real connection with people, which might be missing here. I'm not typically around a lot of people with disabilities. I grew up in the countryside. I grew up not seeing a lot of people who looked like me. And then from a domestic or a national point of view, I am the only person with a disability competing on the national circuit, which in itself makes me quite upset that that is the case. But at the same time, archery is such a leveler that I, even though I physically am not in my own category at national competitions, I'm still able to compete as one of the best archers in the country. I've been national champion for the last 3 out of 4 years, and that's not a para competition, that is just open national field. So for me, what makes me happy here is that I'm able to pursue a sport that normalizes my disability, because it doesn't actually exist.
How did you become involved then with archery, and also then how do you feel we can encourage more people to get involved with the sport?
Yeah, I think I'm about to contradict what I've just said there about 2 minutes ago. So I got involved with the sport because my uncle knew somebody else who was in a wheelchair. And so that barrier or concern around my ability to participate in the sport was automatically eliminated. Now, I never spoke to that person at all about their disability. We didn't have those conversations, but it was just a reassurance that somebody else with a disability was competing. Now, in terms of why other people may or may not get involved in the sport, like I said, it's a leveler. There's no difference between me and anybody else. It's very easily accessible in that if you go to any competition, the equipment being used is exactly the same as what you would expect to see at an Olympic competition. There's no adaptions really from a bow point of view. And then for other people who want to get involved physically, take the steps to get involved, going on to archery.ie and finding a club that will, firstly, is in your area, is all you need to do, because every single club in the country should be more than capable of accommodating somebody with a disability, or in fact anybody who just wants to take up the sport as a whole.
Final question for you, Kerry. What does it mean to you representing Meath, representing your country, representing archery on the world stage?
It makes me extremely proud. I am deeply patriotic, and, you know, being able to hear Aaron Avian playing during the Olympics, regardless of what sport it was, deeply affected me and made me deeply emotional, being able to hear that from such a small country, being able to represent ourselves in such a way on a global scale. For me, being able to do that myself, firstly for my family, for my country, and for my sport, just allows me to continue on that, and I don't take that honour at all for granted. It makes me extremely proud that the investment has been put into me to allow me to be able to give back and represent Ireland, hopefully in a way that makes everyone proud.
Game on.
Football.
Now, we will be crossing live to Tony O'Donoghue in Tallaght Stadium very shortly. We'll be keeping you up to date with Shamrock Rovers in Europe. Kick-off 5 minutes away against Pauk in Greece in their Europa League qualifier, Pats in Conference League qualifier against Istanbul Başakşehir. But Rebecca Cray joins us now first. And Rebecca, you will be staying on to chat men's European football, but women's FAI Cup action. But first, women's League of Ireland action, because last Saturday was potentially a sliding doors moment in the title race, because Athlone came from behind to defeat Shelburne 2-1 in Tolka Park. Athlone now 3 points ahead of Shells with the same amount of games played. Galway played 11 matches. They were crowned Avenir Cup champions last week. If they win all three matches, obviously it's a big if, they will go level on points with Shelburne on 31 points. A bit of a three-way tie for the title race at the moment. And before we talk about the match, Athlone's Chloe Singleton suffered a horrific injury as well, so our thoughts are with Chloe, because it looks like she'll be out of the game for quite some time. Do we have an update on Chloe's kind of recovery, or what the injury was, Rebecca?
Yeah, it was a case. It was horrendous, to be honest with you. You know, knowing Chloe, great player. She's done really well this season. I think she's probably one of their top goal scorers.
Yeah.
You know, it was just one of those things. She went to block a ball and unfortunately had a bad ankle injury. And it's a case, she's had her operation, I think, the day after the game ended, and potentially has to have another operation. But yeah, look, it's going to be a lengthy kind of recovery time for her. But look, great girl. Wish her all the best, obviously, in her recovery. And look, hopefully, and I know she will, you know, knowing her, the determination she has, she'll come back bigger and better.
She has been key to Athlone's good run of form this year. Only 2 defeats and 1 draw. They've won the most matches in the league, 11 matches, 1 out of 14 as well. So how will Athlone cope with the loss of Chloe, and also this victory for them? How impressive were they in terms of their gameplay, and can they push on now?
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting few weeks, you know, and I keep reiterating to the girls, even at Shells, you know, like, nothing's won or lost in that game. You know, obviously it does give them that slight advantage and kind of, you know, mental victory in the sense that, look, they've got that one over Shells, but there's still a long way to go. Obviously, with Chloe being sadly out for them, and I know Casey Howe has departed the club as well. They're two of their top goal scorers and 5 and 4 goals this season. So it's going to be really interesting to see where their goals are going to come from. Obviously, they have got Maddie Gibson in there. They've got really good wingers and Roisin Molloy as well. You know, Kelly Brennan. So they have still got those, you know, Laurie Ryan is in the centre of the park here as well. They've a mainstay of players that are still threatening. But, you know, they've not been in this position before where, you know, they're at top of the table now. There's a pressure that comes with that. I personally, you know, as a player, you always welcome that pressure. It's a privilege nearly. But it will be interesting to see over the coming weeks. You know, they've still got some big fixtures in Piemont, you know, and Galway as well, away. So, Rovers away and Galway away. So, look, it's not a case that anything's won just yet. Nothing's lost either, but I'll be intrigued to see how they set up going forward.
We might flip-flop between looking back and previewing the matches this weekend, because Shells, off the back of that defeat, now they travel to Tallaght on Monday night for an FAI Cup quarterfinal against Rovers as well. Rovers lost in penalties to Galway in the Avenir Cup, so it's two teams looking for a big response, which has all the makings for a proper classic Dublin derby.
Most definitely. Look, it's always a fiery affair anyway, you know, and there's just that added incentive that, look, they're coming off the back of 2 defeats each, or a defeat each, to go out and prove a point now come Monday. And look, the FAI Cup final is the day of the season. Everyone, you know, looks to be there, and I'm sure Rovers would love to be there as well, obviously on home soil in Tallaght Stadium. But you know, Shells will be regrouping this week and going back to the drawing board. And look, they've been there before. They, I think 2021, they're 11 points behind Piemont until the last game of the season. So look, they've got a wealth of players in there who can deal with that pressure and have the experience. But most definitely will be a great game to be at.
Treaty United defeated Sligo 2-1 in Sligo last weekend in the league. Can Treaty trouble Athlone in the Cup? 5 o'clock kickoff on Saturday?
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me. Look, Treaty are that team that, you know, Dominic Foley has done great work with them. They're really well organised, you know, they're tenacious. They come at you from the get-go, and they're coming out to prove a point. Obviously, got that win against Sligo, and they'll be riding high on that, you know. And with Athlone, as I said, being diminished on personnel.
Do they have the strength and depth at Athlone? I know we're flip-flopping between teams now,
look,
as well.
You know, it's a case that they have got the likes of Kelly Brennan that seem to come off the bench this season. Do they have enough depth? I don't know. They rely a lot on youth now, you know, going forward. Unless they tend to bring someone in now before the closing of, you know, the
You can still bring in a free agent.
Yeah, okay. Exactly. So okay. Like it's going to be interesting to see. But look, Treaty are that team I think that are quite underrated this season. Mm. They will probably take points from teams. So yeah, look, that's going to be an interesting battle down in Limerick.
Deal or Waves are 10th in the league. Sligo are 11th, bottom place as well. Yet one of them will be in an FA. I Cup semi-final, which is brilliant for their respective seasons. I saw Deal or Waves in the previous round against your old club Whitehall, actually. They looked pretty decent, it has to be said. And Whitehall did rattle them for the first half hour, but then they pressed on and won handy enough. So for Deal or and Sligo, given their league positions, all eggs are in the cup basket.
Yeah, most definitely. Look, it's great to see those teams that in the kind of lower end of the table. You know, I think years ago, over the course of the league, you always looked at that kind of top four, possibly five, that would be in and around the mix come quarterfinals, come semi-finals. But look, DLR, they beat Piemont, they're 3-2 in the previous league camp or league.
Yeah, only their second win.
Exactly. Yeah. And look, they'll be coming in positive, obviously against Sligo to get to those semis. Laura Heffernan has set them up really
job.
Well.
Smashing
yeah,
job.
Yeah, she's done great things in the recent years, and a lot of people in her squad as well. A lot of youth there as well. But yeah, look, I'd say that'd be a great game, and I, to be honest with you, can only see maybe DLR coming out on top there.
Okay, so DLR, perhaps Treaty can get a cup upset against Athlone. Rover Shell's very difficult to call. Cork Bows, only a point separates them. In the league table, Bows in 6th, Cork in 7th. Perhaps home advantage might swing this the way of Cork, or how do you feel this one playing out,
yeah,
Rebecca?
Potentially, you know, look, Cork, we obviously played them down there a few weeks ago in the previous league game, and look, the first half of that, they troubled us, you know, again, really well organised. Danny Murphy has done a great job with the girls down there. Again, a very young squad. Bows, obviously, in the previous game they played in the league, beat Treaty 1-0. So they'll be coming off the back of a good win, you know, as well, and looking to prove a point to get to those semis. But yeah, it'd be tough going down to Cork. That travel always kind of plays its part as well on the day. But look, these cup games, anything can happen.
Anything can happen. Galway Piemont, there is a league match on Saturday as well, 5 o'clock in Galway. Do you feel the Avenir Cup win will really, as cliche as it is, push them on in the league? They've 3 games now to catch Shells and Athlone. If they win all 3, as I said, they'll go level on points with Shells. So that could be the real kind of fire for Galway to press on in the league.
Yeah, like Galway, as we know, started off really well. You know, we were calling it at the start of the season. Could they go all the way, you know, for the whole season? Obviously, that dipped slightly, fell out of a bit of form, but they do look like they're coming back into it, you know. Obviously they had that loss to Shells previously, beat Rovers then 1-0, and obviously then they've obviously got that win at the weekend. So look, I'd say they'd be going into this game knowing that they've got those 3 games in hand, knowing that if they win all 3 they can, you know, be level on points there with Shells and potentially fighting for a top spot. Again, some great players within that squad, and Julianne Russell, as we know, has done great things internationally.
Yeah.
Has been right on form, leading the line. You know, Jenna Slattery in there, she's always there or thereabouts. You know, she seemed a bit quiet in the recent games, and obviously, unfortunately, missed her penalty in the penalty shootout. And obviously, Lindsay McKee is a mainstay for them in there as well. But Piemont, you know, they're not gone yet. Obviously, fought out that draw with Wexford in the previous. Again, they lost it to DLR. They obviously have Neil Farrelly has come back in for them, signed back from being away in England for a bit. Maybe it's going to take her a game or two, which she obviously was involved in recently to get back into the flow of things. But yeah, look, it's going to be a really, really good affair, I think, down in Galway. And yeah, it's hard to call who's going to win that one. I'm calling the draw myself.
Okay.
But
sitting on the fence, Rebecca.
That's all right.
But Peas aren't still in the title race, are they?
I don't think so. I really don't think so. Like, obviously, they have their Champions League campaign coming up as well, which would be interesting to see. I think this year they've just lacked that little bit of depth.
Okay.
Coming off the bench, you know, obviously the likes of Sive Doyle hasn't been that present. Had a bit of an injury. I think she was away with studies and stuff as well. Erin McLaughlin then obviously left to go across the pond. So it would be very hard to see them clawing their way back up the table. Obviously, they're level on games as well with the top two. So, yeah it's I think it's a case. It'd be very tough to see them come back up.
Okay, just to round up once again, 3 o'clock Saturday, DLR Wave, Sligo, Cork, Bowes and Treaty Athlone, both 5 o'clock kickoffs on Saturday, 5 o'clock as well for Galway, Piemont in the league. And then Monday, 7:45, Shamrock Rovers versus Shelburne in the quarterfinal of the FAI Cup. The semi-final draws will be live on FAI YouTube at 12:30 on Tuesday in the Sports Direct Women's FAI Cup. We are taking a short break. Then Tony O'Donoghue will be joining us live from Tallaght Stadium because St. Pat's are in Conference League qualifier action this evening. We can update you. It is Pauk 0, Shamrock Rovers 0 after 5 minutes of play in Greece in their Europa League qualifier. Don't go away. We are chatting football. But before we do take a break, actually, a text in here, 51552. Can you give a huge shout out to the 77 fighters representing Ireland heading off to Budapest this weekend for the Youth World Kickboxing Championships? Well, best of luck to the 77 fighters. We're taking a short break. We'll be back with you.
Game on.
Football.
Now, it is Pauk 0, Shamrock Rovers 0. 7.5 minutes gone in their Europa League qualifier in Greece. However, Tony O'Donoghue joins us from Tallaght Stadium because there wasn't a great deal of optimism around St. Pat's when they began their European campaign due to poor league form before and indeed even during the Stephen Kenny era. However, wins over Vaduz and Sabah have changed the mood in Dublin 8 and given their manager a platform to build on. So, Tony O'Donoghue, first and foremost, who is starting for St. Pat's this evening?
It's an unchanged team from last week's win in Azerbaijan. There were some concerns that there was a bit of flu in the camp, Stephen Kenny told me yesterday, but Alex Scheuberg and Romel Palmer have recovered from illness and they'll start while Alex Nolan makes the bench after a knock. So the team is Joseph Anang in goal, right full back Scheuberg, the centre has Redmond and Gravoski, Anto Breslin on the left side of the Saints defence with Forrester and Lennon screening in midfield. The midfielders, the wingers have been really important, always important to a Stephen Kenny team, Jake Mulrani and Zach Elbezedi, with Romel Palmer hoping that he can continue his revelatory form, you'd have to say, since he came back and recovered from injury. And young Mason Melia leads the line up front, number 9 on his back for St. Patrick's Athletic. So, you know, it's asking a lot, there's no question about that, but nonetheless, that's the team they hope will get a result that they can bring back to Istanbul next Wednesday, not next Thursday. That's one of the things that Stephen Kenny has been complaining about, I suppose, concerned about, certainly. They've got to go to Oriel Park on Sunday and then get themselves to Istanbul for a Wednesday, not a Thursday game. So, you know, preparation time, recovery time, absolutely crucial. But they'll want to recover with something to aim for in Turkey next week. And that's all about getting a decent performance first and a decent result from that unchanged St. Pat's team against Bekaa Shir later on this evening.
Yeah, going to Dundalk, playing on a synthetic pitch, far from ideal as well. Stephen Kenny, listen, he's achieved so much as a manager with Dundalk in Europe, returning to the venue of that famous triumph over Bate Borisov. What is it, Tony, about Stephen Kenny and European football?
It's his 51st club game in charge in Europe, and he seems to understand the rhythm of it and seems to get the most out of players. I mean, he's making the point in the programme today that this is one of the biggest nights in the club's history. But for the players, they must give so much of themselves. They dedicate their lives, he says, to becoming professional footballers. And European competition really is the highlight of their careers. So victories in Europe are very, very special. And there will be something that these players will be speaking about for the rest of their lives, probably. I mean, it's already been a successful European campaign as far as Pats are concerned. But if they were to make the group stages, well, that would put them down as legends, really, in the history of St. Patrick's Athletic. So Stephen can tap into that, I think, and he can get the most out of players, maybe more than they expect that they even have in terms of potential and then in terms of performance. He's done it time and again. He's overachieved with so many teams. His time in charge of the Republic of Ireland was disappointing, you'd have to say, in terms of results. But then he had an awful lot of young players coming through. But look, as I mentioned at the start, he's always invested his trust in attacking play, in being on the front foot. He's always loved a winger. And the wingers this evening, Mulrani and Elbezedi have been on the score sheet. Palmer has been terrific. So, you know, it won't be about digging in. I think they'll be trying to, you know, get on the front foot and try and prove to Bekaksh this year and to themselves, that they're worthy of this stage. And, you know, there'll be over 6,000 people here in Tallaght this evening. Rain has been falling. It actually feels winterish, and they'll be hoping that they can stay, you know, in competition in professional football right through to December if they can make the league stages now of the Europa Conference League.
I do want to pick your brain on how the players might react to that bumper crowd in Tallaght, but just to update our listeners with Pauk Rovers, Leon Poles has made an unbelievable save. Sean Hoare deflected a shot onto the goal, but the keeper gone the wrong way. Poles reacted brilliantly to help the shot away with a scoop save to keep it scoreless as well. Trevor Clark was down with an injury. He's walking gingerly, but still on the pitch at the moment. 12 minutes gone in that one. Still nil all in Greece. Tony,
I'm glad to hear, by the way, Shane, that Poles is doing well, but there's a warning for Rovers. Poles is one of the players who's just a yellow card away from missing the second leg. The others are Hoare, as you mentioned, and Josh Honohan. And no more than St. Pat's here, but going away from home first and bringing the opposition back home. Stephen Bradley will be hoping that he'll have a full complement of players to choose from, and be it time wasting or fouling or whatever, he won't want to be missing any players, particularly a goalkeeper. Now he's already Pigo Lopez didn't start this evening, so I mean that's significant. I think Dan Cleary coming in for him, he is on the bench, but again I would say Bradley probably thinking about next week. And no point in risking him tonight. Get the most out of the team tonight. Use the bench. You know, Danny Mandroy, who's back for Rovers, he's on the bench. Mark McNulty as well. And if they can bring it back to Tallaght, well, I think they'll have more than 6,000 people here next week if they come back with a positive result from Pauk and Thessaloniki this evening.
A couple of cracking nights in store in Tallaght Stadium. How will the Pats players cope with that crowd and the atmosphere and just the occasion of it all, Tony?
I think they've done it already, haven't they? They've done it away from home. They were in Tallaght last week, and you know, I think there's no doubt. I mean, particularly since the new North Stand has been put in, that this feels like a proper football stadium now. The pitch is tremendous. I was just talking to Keith Tracy a short time ago, and for footballers, you know, when the rain is coming down gently like this, you don't really need sprinklers. There's going to be a lovely zip on the ball, and I think they'll enjoy that. And hopefully if the crowd play a part, as the Rovers crowd did last week, VAR played a part as well, of course, and that's something that may be contentious later on in this game. But if they can deal with all the unknowns and the knowns, the crowd is a factor, the referee, the VAR could be a factor, the opposition may be the most important factor in taking into account, because I think they are up a level to either Sabah or FC Vaduz. I think they're looking forward to it. Excuse me. Speaking to Jamie Lennon yesterday, and he certainly, you know, he's confident of his own ability. There's a lot of experience in the Pats team as well. You know, I mean, Breslin has played 10 European games. Jamie Lennon has played 12, and Chris Forrester in the centre of the park has played 21. So there's nothing new for those sort of guys in terms of tonight. And in terms of scoring in Europe, well, Jake Mulrani, Zach Albizetti and Romal Palmer all have two European goals. So that's a decent stat to start the evening with. So I think they'll relish it. I think they'll try and grasp it. And I think Stephen Kenny will have them doing the team talk as we speak, no doubt. Will have them fired up and in the right frame of mind to take on a top-class opposition.
Okay, great stuff, Tony. Enjoy the match. There will be live updates on the RTÉ Sport website. Tony will have reaction on all of RTÉ's social media platforms in the morning. Morning Ireland will have radio reports and reaction from the match as well. Tony Dunhill, thank you very much. Rebecca, just before we do take a break, just with your former player hat on, you've played at the highest level as well. And I mentioned just about coping with the occasion as well. These are the matches you want to be in. You mentioned a league run in for Shells and Athlone and potentially Galway. Pressure is a privilege. Exactly the matches you want to be playing in.
Yeah, most definitely. It kind of gives you that opportunity, you know, if you're not doing too well domestically, just park that for a week or so, or a week or two, and you know, get into these occasions and enjoy them. Like, the atmospheres are completely different, I think, to domestic games, you know, a bit more raucous, and you know, the fans of oppositions, especially in Europe, are that bit more hectic, you know, let's just say. And it just gives you that kind of, you know, great memories, I suppose. And I think it's something that the likes of myself and other girls that have played in Champions League campaigns, even at, you know, in the years gone by, you just remember those days and, you know, and the potential that comes from them. Obviously, financially within clubs in our league and the kind of representation it gives Ireland in Europe. But yeah, really great occasion, and as I said, gives them time to park the domestic side of things and enjoy the night.
Okay, just under an hour away, kickoff in Tala for St. Pat's. Powick Rovers still nil all, 16 and a half minutes played in that one. Rebecca Cray, thank you very much.
Cheers.
Pleasure as always chatting to you. Big thanks to Tony as well. We're taking an ad break now, and then we are going to be chatting American football, because Jeff Shepherd is on the line with his eye in America, and Alan Lamosny is also with us as well, manager of the Irish Wolfhounds, because there's American football in Donnybrook tomorrow night, and there's American football in the Viva Stadium. Lots to look forward to. Stay with us here on Game On 2FM.
Game On.
Eye on America.
Now, Georgia Tech will return to Ireland for the second time since 2016 when they defeated Boston College by 17 points to 14 in the Viva Stadium. Florida State University will play their first game in Ireland with a big match on Saturday. We will be previewing that in due course. Jeff Shepherd is on the line, but Alan Lamosny is with us because the Global Ireland Football Tournament is returning for another instalment this summer, and after they stunned an elite high school programme in their 2023 debut, the Irish National Junior American Football outfit will feature prominently on this year's slate of games. Their opponents for this occasion are the Great Britain Under-19 squad, with their duel set to take place tomorrow evening. So, Alan, paint the picture for us. What is happening in Donnybrook? It's going to be some humdingers of a couple of American football matches.
It is, Shane. We're going to be playing GB under-19s.
Right.
Obviously, that's a big rivalry between ourselves and Great Britain.
Yeah. Goes back a long way.
It does, just a bit. So, yeah, I mean, look, we started the under-19s programme last year. We took part in Gift against an American high school, and we did fairly well against them. So we were invited back again this year, and looking forward, we're the third game, so we're the Friday Night Lights game, 7 p.m. tomorrow night. And yeah, looking forward to a good, solid game against them.
Okay, so Donnybrook is going to host it. It's a triple header of games with no less than four top-class US high school football teams taking to the field. 12 noon, the action gets underway. The Marauders out of Tallahassee taking on the Windham Jaguars of New Hampshire. At 3:30 then, it's the IMG Academy. Yes, the biggest high school programme in America will face a school from Dallas, and what should be an absolute cracker. And then it's your own match then at 7 against GB as well. Like, it's high school football, but this is at a bloody high standard.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, the four teams that are coming over, I mean, they're at the top of their level in their areas that they're in. I mean, IMG, as you said, they're a huge outfit. They, you know, we were at Pep Rally there earlier, and you see the size of some of their guys. They're just they're on a different level altogether.
Yeah,
to some of
they're eating
guys.
Their meat and spuds.
Oh, yeah, and other people's.
Shep, if I bring Shep actually into the conversation, Shep, just on this IMG Academy as well, as Alan was kind of explaining there, like, they're about as close to a college program as you can get at high school level, really, Shep.
Yeah, they really are, guys. And Coach hit it right on his head. It's, you know, you see some of these guys and they're, 17, 18 years old, and you're like, are they not an alien? Like, what is happening here? You know, I mean, they just look like a different species. You know, IMG, you know, they actually recruit. I mean, they pull kids from all over the country. It's not like it's just from, you know, kids in Florida that go to play there. And they'll pull people from all over the world for other sports like tennis and golf and different things like that. So it uses athletics. I mean, it's in a very wealthy part of Florida. But I think that's just a wonderful get to bring, you know, schools like this. They're playing a big school out of Texas in their game. I mean, Texas high school football is phenomenal as well. I mean, there's, you know, tens of thousands of kids that play football, maybe hundreds of thousands of kids that play football in Texas, you know, every single year. So I think that's going to be a real great, you know, opportunity to kind of see that age group playing at some of the highest levels you ever see. Well, if you don't mind, Shane, I'd like to ask Coach a question.
Fire ahead.
Just and I apologize if this has already been discussed, but Coach, you know, when did your players kind of start playing, you know, American football? I mean, was it something that they were younger, or was it kind of picked up in, what is it, secondary school, I believe is what it's called over there? I mean, I apologize if I said the wrong name.
Right,
but I mean, like,
right.
You know, when was it that, you know, the players kind of took interest in the sport?
A lot of the guys have played youth football already in Ireland. So all the local club teams around the country will have youth programs. So they can start at 15 And they play youth football until they're 18. So that's mainly who we get our under 19 team from. So we select from those teams. We also get guys that are in their first year playing senior football. But I think, you know, in the last few years with the, you know, there's been a huge explosion in the interest in NFL, especially with access to social media and what players do.
Right.
And you know, we're seeing a huge increase in the amount of 9 to 14-year-old kids that are into the NFL, supporting the NFL. And you know, they're interested in how can we get to play football in Ireland. So
that's fantastic.
Yeah, so we're just, you know, that's why we set up the under 19 program last year at the national level to try and give the kids, you know, something to aim for. And again, to represent your country is a huge honor, and no matter what sport you play. So you know, that's what we're trying to achieve.
How big is the playing pool?
Playing youth football in Ireland, there are probably 60, 70 kids in total.
Okay,
you know,
okay.
See, I suppose they age out, you know, so you'll have some coming in every year, some leaving every year. We're kidding 47 guys tomorrow.
Okay.
So we'll have a big squad, yeah.
That's a proper numbers.
Oh, it is, yeah.
Yeah. Listen, there is a match on in the Aviva tomorrow. Just the tickets on sale still at the moment,
yeah,
Alan,
yeah, yeah.
If you're in the Donnybrook
on
area.
On the Gift website, yeah.
From 12 noon it all begins, and then 7 o'clock with the big one, the Junior Wolfhounds against the British Lions. Just if we fast forward to Saturday, because I am conscious we've 5 minutes left in this evening's show. Shep, Georgia Tech, Florida State. You haven't joined us. I thought you'd be over here at the Aviva on Saturday, Shep.
Well, look, Shane. So there is a real, real big push from the coach at LSU that he wants to come play a game in Ireland. And that's where I went to school. And you can
that will be
bet
huge.
Your... behind. I will be in Ireland and I will be at the Aviva if the LSU Tigers come playing a football game over there. So he,
Tigers.
His name's, yeah, that's right. Coach Brian Kelly. And he, you know, he coached Notre Dame for a long time, the Fighting Irish. So, you know, it's a little bit kind of in his blood and, you know, the last name Kelly. And so, yeah, he wants to come over. He has said it repeatedly this offseason that he wants that to happen. And so look for that in the future game. But for tomorrow,
yeah,
Florida State and Georgia Tech. Florida State's about a 10.5, 11-point favorite. They're ranked 10th to start the season. You know, they were a powerhouse in the 90s and early 2000s and had kind of struggled after that, but have kind of returned to national prominence here in the last couple of seasons. Look, I'm going to butcher this guy's name. Their quarterback that you want to keep an eye on, DJ Uagalele. I'll be able to say it maybe.
I'm glad you tried it.
Yeah, but look, you know, it's a tongue twister for sure. But just he'll be DJU. That's what y'all will call him. And look, he's not a stranger to college football fans. He started out at Clemson, then he played at Oregon State. And now he's at Florida State, and so he's got a lot of experience. Florida State is starting to get their groove back when it comes to recruiting some of the best players. And now you've got all these transfers like DJU. So they've got a better roster. They have, you know, a better team. They should win this game. I was talking to Andrew, our producer, before, and, you know, I was letting him know, I was reading an article about all the things that they had to pack to come over. And just to give you an idea real quick, the teams combined to bring 238 crates of material weighing 40,000 pounds to come over to this football game this week, and they had to, you know, list every single thing that they were bringing. I just thought it was really interesting.
Yeah, it's crazy. The amount of stuff. I mean, we were at the Northwestern practice there a couple of years ago.
Yeah,
with Pat Fitzgerald.
Right.
The amount of stuff they had was frightening. The amount of people they bring over for the band.
Yeah,
is ridiculous.
That's right.
You know, they could have 100 people in the band alone.
Wow.
Right.
Yeah,
it's phenomenal. And that's just the. That's just the travel band, Coach. That's not even the full one.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know? I mean, that's kind of the half band.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. But I know they're looking for... I actually had a meeting with Coach Mike Norvell there a couple of months ago when he was over
great.
Here. And he's looking forward to coming over. He, you know, they're looking to build on what they had last year. I know they have a lot of turnover in some of their positions, and I know they've lost a few receivers. They have a new quarterback, but... He's a very offensive minded guy, and I think Georgia Tech will struggle to keep up with the firepower that they have.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And look, Shane, real quick, I know all coaches players want to be Charlie Smith, right? He booted a 65 yarder this week in practice.
Are you guys getting as excited about him as we are over here, Shep?
I mean, look, I am obviously just he plays for the you know he's with the Saints, my team. I'm a season ticket holder, plus obviously my connection. You know, with everything I get to do with RTE. So I've been paying attention to it. But I will say this, if he keeps kicking 60-something yard field goals, it's not just the Saints coaches that are watching him.
Yeah.
It's other people that are watching him as well. So if he, for some reason, you know, isn't the guy that the Saints go with and he clears waivers, he may not clear waivers. He will be on – he could potentially be on another team to start the season. So that's just something to keep an eye on.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of people watching him.
Okay.
A lot of people watching him. I mean, consistently hitting distances of over 60 is not that common in the NFL.
Okay.
You know, there is a select few that can do it.
Yeah.
But, you know, not consistently. So if he's knocking doors over from 66 and he's dependable, that's a very valuable thing in the NFL.
That's right.
Okay. Well, that is brilliant news. Unfortunately, we have to leave the conversation there. Shep, gentlemen, as always, pleasure chatting to you over Thursday. Alan, we're going to get you back in. I'm going rogue here, but I'm going to let the producer book you. We're going to get you back in because I do want to pick your brain more about American football in Ireland and the kids coming through as well. Hope it all goes well for you tomorrow.
Much,
very best
thank
of
you.
Luck. Crack of a match tomorrow, crack of a match on Saturday as well. That is all we have time for. Alan, thank you. Shep, thank you. Big thanks to Andrew O'Connor and Laurie Davis for working on this evening's show. Rachel May Hannon is up next with the new music show, so do not go anywhere. Game On is back tomorrow from 6 o'clock, but first we're going to check in with the news desk. So for me and all of the Game On team, it is bye for now.